Jotunheim, the heart of the network of the gods. Miles of bone, sinew, and synapse. It's time to tear it all down. Ragnarok is coming, and it's you.
Hello and welcome to a very special, very different, but maybe not so different episode of Iron Edda Reforged. I am Tracy, the designer, nominal narrator, so on and so forth, but today, I don't have the regular crew with me. Alex and B and Jeff, scheduling stuff came up, I have a baby, shit happens. So we are doing, tonight, a side story. And I have with me a wonderful, wonderful group of people. We're just going to go in alphabetical order because that's how it is in the Discord chat here. So we're going to hop up to the top. Bees, DJ, introduce yourself. Tell the people who you are and what you're about.
Hello, everyone. I'm DJ, also known as Big Bees all over the interwebs. I am a voice actor, variety streamer, pixel artist, and trying to get into speedrunning. Yeah, I'm super excited to play this, and I'm just ready to get in.
Wonderful. That is fantastic. We're going to jump down now to Melissa. Melissa, tell the people what's going on.
Hello, I am Melissa, and I am currently playing a tree cleric named Jacaranda Rowan in The Mind and the Martyr on Monday nights on Friends Who Roll Dice. And in the past, I have been in a Cyberpunk Red campaign that was also really fun, and I played a mechanic in that was really good at driving named Melisandre Ensley de la Roche, also known as Metal. So that's really fun. I just like playing games with my friends and making new friends along the way. So I'm excited to be here as well and meet everybody.
Fantastic. Sebastian, hit it.
Hi, everybody. I am Sebastian. I use they, them pronouns. I am a TTRPG game designer, writer, editor, and performer. I write a lot of stuff for 5e, which you can find on DM's Guild. I also write my own indie games on Itch, and you can see me performing over at Hutopia.
Wonderful. And last, but most certainly not least, here we are, JV Hampton Van Zandt. Thank you, everyone here, for those who are listening. I set this up yesterday as of the recording of this, so everyone who is here is doing me a huge favor in hopping in and doing this sort of new thing for Iron Edda Reforged Puppet Strings. So what this is a side story. It is a contained, standalone bit of narrative that will add to what's going on in the main Puppet Strings show, but can be done on its own with whomever happens to be around, right? The impetus behind this is a lot of gaming groups. You have nights where things just don't go as planned, right? You've got people who can't make it. Maybe you have to do it virtually when you had an in-person session planned or vice versa. So you don't want to run with your main plot because you want all your core players to be there for the story. So this is a way to add stuff that the main plot can interact with a totally separate group of people all doing their own thing. So if you have listen to this before, this starting procedure is going to be pretty familiar to you. So the way that a side story works is every game of Iron Edda Reforged, someone, the main group, has chosen a god to take down, right? We're in season one, it's Jotunheim, so your options are Tyr, Mimir, and Thor. And the Puppet Strings crew are taking down Tyr, who is basically the leader of the police force of Jotunheim. So a grade A first class dick. And the side story works in that you all who are here are going to be playing characters who are somehow connected to the fall of Tyr, but not the main sort of revolutionary cell that's happening in the big plot. The Panopticon isn't as unified as Tyr thinks it is. Outwardly, the black visors and body armor of the RPB look uniform, controlled, indomitable. Inside the walls of the Panopticon, there are cracks forming. Disgruntled employees have been hearing whispers of revolution, of the coming of the neon Fimbulwinter, of Ragnarok. Some of these people are radicals who have infiltrated the inner workings, ready to wreak havoc when the time is right. For most people who work in the Panopticon, however, any dereliction of duty or working from the inside is a new set of actions. Even though the actions are new, They represent a total break with their former corporate adherence to rule and code. Once someone acts as a collaborator, their lives are forever different. This isn't atonement. It is, however, a mark that they are no longer who they once were. So, that's the deal. That's the sort of setup for these six questions that are in front of us. And I want to make a particular note because I made a very deliberate effort to bring in a group of all POC to be on this recording with me. And Tyr runs the police. And there's at least one option in here where you would be playing people who have who worked for the police bureau and have decided to defect. The reason the short sentence, "This isn't atonement," is in that previous paragraph is because I don't want this to be anything like a redemptive story for authoritarian enforcers, right? That's not the point of this game. The point is to tear down the regime. So if anyone has any like weirdness about that or objections to it, we'll elide around it if that question comes up. And rest assured, there is a sensitivity reader who is going to be going over this after me. So if I flubbed this, because it's entirely possible that I did, I just want everyone to be aware that I'm kind of trying to be cognizant of that because it's potentially uncomfortable and I don't want that to be the case. So everyone feel good with where we are before we get to the question?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you indeed.
Fantastic. Cool. Like to make sure that the bases are covered. So who has a D6 they want to roll?
I do.
Ooh. All right. DJ got to it first.
All right. It was actually just like instinctual because I hate going first because I'm always just like,
All right. So go ahead and roll the D6. And that will be the question that we are all going to collectively answer because I'm making a character along with y'all so we can tell this bit of story together.
All right. Let's start with beautiful purple. Let's go. All right. D6. Boom. Two.
Each of you has been jailed unjustly. However, the normal vigilance of the guards has grown lax. What opening do you have for escape, and why is tonight the night? So, really happy we got that question. That's a fun one. And we can add whatever details we want to with this. The Panopticon, what Tyr's stronghold, where we are all jailed. That's what we're breaking out of.
Ooh. Very cool.
Oh.
Yes. The setting itself has a few, like, key pillars. It is cyberpunk, and it is influenced by Norse myth without the white supremacy. So whatever details you want to come up with that are in keeping with those things, it's all fair game. I'll wave anything off that's like way over the top. But what is the opening that we have tonight for escape?
I want to think either, oh, it could be like a I don't know if it's like monthly or like every 6 months, you know, those like annual maintenance where they have to work on the system to make sure everything's operating properly. So there's going to be a small window where the cameras are down and, you know, everything has to kind of just go to manual instead of like automatic locks and whatnot. So this is our best chance to, you know, we don't have to worry about everything being controlled from like the central, like that central office.
Like a control tower?
Yeah, exactly. Everything's not going to be controlled from there. It's going to be just old school. Everything is just manually locked and patrolled and watched over. So that's our best, you know, that other than thousands of cameras and everything locked at a push of a button is the best chance for us to escape.
There's more opportunity for user error.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we have manual override is in effect for regular maintenance. Cool. And why tonight is the night? I mean, obviously that seems like the two just sort of dovetail together, right? There should be another detail layered on top of that, though. So like, obviously, there's going to be more physical bodies patrolling the place, right? To try and be the eyes that the cameras can't be. Sebastian, I saw you open your mouth there. What are you thinking?
Yeah, maybe because there's more people, there are more potential for error, and perhaps maybe on patrol, because now everything is manual, it means that the lock can be picked just like any other lock. So perhaps one of the guards drops something that we could use as a lock pick and is within reach.
Or maybe they're new Like maybe it's like new, they had to hire more people, so they're new and they don't necessarily know how things work, or they don't know that this specific item is so heavily important to something, so they're not keeping as close an eye on it, or they do something that they shouldn't do because they're just inexperienced.
Ooh. I like that. That work for everybody else?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it says the normal vigilance of the guards has grown lax. So that could definitely tie into there's new guards, definitely like a mass hire because they were running low on forces. And then the ones that have been there for a while are just like, I'm so over this. Just do whatever, you know, I'm going to teach you the basics, but really just don't bother me. Let me sit here till the end of my shift.
Everybody knows that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Ineffective and new. Love it.
Yeah, so I put down untrained and experienced guards, and someone dropped an Omni Key. It has limited uses, but it should be enough to get through the gates, right? Because the new guards say they're given this thing, and it's like, look, you're going to be here for 7.5 hours. You will need to open the door to get in. You have one bathroom break that also has a key, and you're going to need to open the door to get out. So here's your Omni Key. Don't lose it.
And what do they do? They lose it.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Almost immediately.
Fantastic. So we are going to then move to, well, let's see. We'll do characters first and then we'll hop into the story tracker. So everyone who is a part of the revolution is a member of a warrior clan. Warrior clans are basically the classes of this game. So you get a blurb about what their general deal is. All the clans have what is called a way, which is sort of the power set that they get to interact with the world. You get a list of genders that are available. You can make your own up if you sort of get the vibe of what is written there and you want to do your own. That's absolutely cool. And then you see the abilities that you have available to you when we get to like mechanical stuff. But that's all the character stuff. So what you'll do is you will come up with a name for your character. You will choose a clan. And then you will declare details for the character. If you have played a game like Fate with aspects, then details are very similar. For D&D 5e as a touch point, it's kind of like flaws, bonds, and ideals, right? It's a statement that is true about your character, but unlike in 5e, these actually matter because they are how you roll the dice. So in this game, when you are taking an action, unless it is a risky action where the possibility of failure or complication is actually interesting to the narrative, you just say what you do. Right. When there are stakes involved, that's when the dice come into play, and you will pick one of your three details and roll the dice associated with that. So say if your excellent detail was something like have axe will travel, right? Then that gives you an idea of sort of the realm of actions that you can use that detail for. Below the details, we also have gear. Gear are just things you have. If a piece of gear would help you on a roll, you add one die. If a piece of gear would hinder you, you take one die away. And that's it. You can assign whatever pronouns to your character you want based on the gender that you have chosen. Everyone in the main podcast uses he, she, they interchangeably, which I think is absolutely dope. But y'all can do whatever you want to.
Yeah, I'm really looking at the bone bonded. If not the bone bonded, then it's going to be the ox.
Nice.
I like the duality of the bone bonded, so I could play a character because I definitely want to play a, you know, a big burly oomph, just boom, boom, punch stuff. But with the duality of the bone bonded, I could play whatever main character, and then whenever I summon the bone bonded, that could be my big, you know, himbo knocking stuff out. You know, as the ox, then it would just be that character the whole time. So I don't know. I want to do both. I'm like,
So in terms of the details, sorry, are there... Not like a formula exactly, but could you give us another example of what those might sound like? I'm just trying to write mine up.
Yeah, so I will pull an example from that I used to use when I ran Fate a lot, because I'm going to be honest, these details are ripped directly from Fate. That was the system that sort of I cut my teeth on as a designer. So if we were going to assign details to Han Solo from Star Wars, specifically Episode 4, mm-hmm. Han Solo, his excellent detail would be Smuggler with a Heart of Gold. Right. And his good detail might be always have Jabba's goons hot on my trail. Right. And so if you would think about then when you would use the dice with those, Smuggler with a Heart of Gold, well, that covers Smuggler And that also covers how he interacts with people. So if he wants to be that charming, roguish, you know, rakish guy, then he'd roll his excellent dice, or if he's trying to smuggle something, so on and so forth. If he's trying to sneak away from something, then the always have Jabba's goons on my tail would be a really good one, because it speaks to the skill set he would use to evade them, right? So it can be something as plain as always carry a sword, right? That's a fine detail also. So that it can be really, they can be kind of flowery and poetic, or they can be straight to the point and a more limited range of things. And I'm pretty open with how you interpret using them. Like if you chose always carry a sword, that's not just a sword that you have, right? It also speaks to who you are as a person.
Okay, so if I pick something like hacker thief with an eye for detail, is that useful?
Yes, 100%.
Okay, thank you. Because I think that probably goes with my choice of clan for snake. So I'm trying to make something that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a fantastic detail.
I feel like my brain really needs a thesaurus.
If you have some ideas, I can help you distill them down into a short, pithy kind of thing, because I have a lot of experience doing that from playing Fate. So what are you thinking?
So I want it to be someone who questions, so like a questioning, sly person who speaks carefully in order to be able to make things mean what they want, kind of.
Okay. So since you started with questioning, I would say for your excellent detail, you could do something like there's always more to know, right? And then for your good detail, you could have I measure my words like a carpenter. Is that evoking like the kind of feel that you want?
Yes.
Great. And then I would use those sort of translations of what you were talking about and think about like another thing that you can add on and put it in your own words.
Okay, and the clan would be the bone bonded.
You have got it. And when you're done with your details, if you're looking at the gear and you can't really think of what you want to put in there, you can leave those open. And as it comes up, you can just be like, oh yeah, I've got this thing, because it makes situational sense. And we'll just fill that in for a piece of your gear.
I like that actually, because then that way I don't have the stress of having to think of gear that might be useful and then thinking, oh, I wish I picked something else. I prefer that actually.
Yeah. So it's a little bit of Blades in the Dark, if you're familiar with that. So you have like gear slots, but I'm not concerned about what can fit in those gear slots. I'm just concerned that by the time we wrap the session, they're filled, if there's been a reason to fill them. And that's not the be all end all of what you have either. Those are just the notable items that could be directly helpful or directly a hindrance.
So in terms of gear, what kinds of, like, what would the scope for that be?
Well, we're in prison.
Okay.
Right? So I would imagine that our gear is extremely limited and is what we could scrounge as contraband, what we could hide. The two I put down is I've got a pocket shiv, because one of my details is never met a dagger I didn't like. And then I have an extra set of rations. If there's something that you want to have that seems like it would be really sort of outside the pale of what you might be able to easily have smuggled in or hidden, then you can still get that. You would just get rid of one of your control points.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Which function like story points. Well, they have a mechanical interaction as well, but one of the things you can do with them is declare sort of more narratively convenient details, and we would call a hyper illegal piece of gear that.
Okay, yeah, makes sense. I can leave some slots open in case we, I don't know, acquire some throughout the course of the game.
Yeah, because especially as we are going to be making our way through a prison, it's entirely possible that we are going to get our hands on all kinds of stuff that we otherwise would not normally be able to have. Some of it may not be like that important. Like if we all take down a squad of guards and we put on body armor and we're dressed like RPB officials, you're not going to put that in a gear slot. It's just a thing that's true for all of us, right?
Okay. Yep. So shall I record the Omni key as something that I have, unless that's just kind of communal property?
I'm fine with you being the one carrying it. How does everyone else feel about that?
Sure.
Yeah.
Down for that.
So Vanquista has the Omni key, a very important piece of our how we get the hell out of here plan.
I can carry it, but of course everyone is welcome to it because, you know, teamwork.
Mm-hmm.
And DJ, you also, by the way, you have an extra piece of work to do for your stuff.
Ooh, okay.
You got to make your giant, my friend.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I liked with in the Tinker Hammer one, you also created like automatons or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really cool addition as well.
Nice. I love people's reaction to this game. It makes me really happy because everyone's just like, yo, this slaps.
It does. This is so cool.
This is very fun. I'm deeply here for this.
All right. Is that a good like pronunciation thing underneath my name?
Elouf Orison.
There you go. Beautiful. All right. Yeah.
Nice.
All right.
Yeah.
I hope mine is okay.
Honestly, the only part of mine
that... Money Paul's daughter.
Oh, okay, cool. So you got it perfectly right.
Is that okay? Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Marnie Paul's daughter?
All right. Well, it looks like our characters are pretty well fleshed out. And in the interest of time, DJ, you can fill in your giant as we're going, because that won't be necessarily as important. And I'm going to go in reverse order of how we went for the up top introductions. So I'll introduce my character, and then it'll be Sebastian, Melissa, JV, DJ. So I am playing Hall Bendison. Anyone who's listened to the main podcast, it's the son of that particular Bendis. So that's there's a tie into another character there. I am the Horse Clan. My gender is a cold drink and a warm shower. You can use any pronouns that you want for me. My excellent detail is leap before you look. My good detail is never met a dagger I didn't like. And my fair detail is sucker for a pretty face.
Oh,
sweet. Lovely. Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Nice to meet you too. Sebastian, hit it.
Yep. My character is Vinquista de Scipio. I am of the Snake Clan. My gender is a black velvet cloak, which I love. My excellent detail is hacker thief with an eye for detail. My good detail is working with allies makes my job easier. And my fair detail is eyes on the prize at all times.
Wonderful.
Oh, and I'm going to continue the tradition of this podcast and use they, she, and he pronouns all interchangeably.
Awesome. All right, then, Melissa.
I will be playing Ashkali Eisenthley, Clan Raven, and my gender is Whispered Promise, which can be a positive or a negative thing, depending what the promise is. And my first excellent detail is question everything except with discretion. Good detail, vagueness is more pliable into truth. Fair detail, underestimated prey can easily become predator.
Ooh. Holy shit.
Ooh.
This rocks. JV, hit it. Tell us.
All right. I am Marnie Paul's daughter, Clan Dragon. Gender, neon on a dark night. Pronoun, she, her. Excellent detail, there's beauty and joy in chaos. Good detail, a tangled string is a satisfying challenge. And fair detail, a little bloodshed never hurt anyone for long.
Love.
And DJ, please.
So, my character is Elouf Orison, Clan Bone Bonded. Excellent detail is a fool claims to know everything. The wise know they never will. Good detail is time is relevant. Your choices are the future you seek. And the fair detail is that doesn't mean what you think it means.
And what is your gender?
And my gender is a dusty tomb.
Mood.
And the pronouns are, for the most part, he, him, but will randomly go to they, them as... Like, as the bone bonded becomes more involved or is, like, active, then we'll refer to, like, they, them, because it's two separate entities, but for the most part, they usually share a consciousness, so.
Nice. Also, for your gear and sort of the narrator role, and because of the context of where we are, I'm going to pop a piece of gear in there.
All right.
Which is a network ankle lock, because... The authorities can't just have you summoning a giant in prison, right? So you basically have a block on the giant's network access. It's still in your brain, right? You mm-hmm. still can talk to it, but the giant can't, at this exact moment as we're starting things off, cannot access any network resources.
All right.
Just because I think, just from an authoritarian standpoint, that makes sense, unfortunately. Cool. So, we have our characters. The next step for all of this is that we need to develop our story tracker for a full campaign, we would be having multiple plot threads with like things that we need to accomplish to like get to the end of it. Because this whole game is predicated on the idea that Ragnarok, the actual fall of the gods, is an inevitability. We know it's going to happen. The question is how it happens. That's the interesting part. So that thread, that sort of ethos, is carried through the entire game. So we are going to break out of jail tonight. It's going to happen. Like, it's unquestioned. That's the end result of this session, is we are breaking out of jail.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
The question is how it happens.
Jailbreak.
Mm-hmm. Jailbreak.
Tonight, there's going to be a jailbreak. Oh, little Thin Lizzy reference for everyone. And what we need to do is we need to come up with four sort of things that need to happen. These can be goals we need to meet. These can be scenes we need to play to ensure that this is the case. The last one is the easiest one, because the last one is
escape.
Mm-hmm. So we need to decide what we need to accomplish to make sure we get there. I would imagine, if everyone is in agreement, that this is going to start out with us all on the verge of gathering together to execute whatever our plan is. So think like maybe a communal time, like a meal time or a recreational time, rather than us all being in whatever our holding cells look like.
Yeah, I think so.
So with that as the context, what's the first thing we need to do to like kick this all off?
Rendezvous. Mm-hmm. So like that is in fact to have this meeting, right?
Okay, so we all need to find a way to come together to get things pulled in and get going. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Okay, if you're all comfortable, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to leave the middle two steps empty at this exact moment. Mm-hmm. In our rendezvous scene, we know, again, because it happens on a micro scale too, right? The goal of the scene is to kick off the actual thing. So through our playing of this first scene, we're going to establish what that is. That's our sort of target for the end of this scene. Does that resonate with everybody?
Yeah, I love that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so a few things. We'll do a little bit of mechanical rundown, and we're also going to talk about the other characters' side of things. So I said before that whatever actions you take, generally speaking, you're just going to be able to do them, right? If it makes sense that your character would be able to do it, you do. If risk is narratively interesting, that's when we bring the dice in. You will grab up however many dice are in your pool based on the detail that you're going to use for the action, and you will roll them. Fives and sixes are successes. Difficulties range anywhere from 1 to 5. 1 is relatively trivial, but not so trivial that you don't need to make an attempt for it. 5 is the gods would be challenged by this. Mm. Right? So that's your sort of spectrum of difficulty as of right now. I may need to tweak that out a little bit as I playtest more, but that will give you a decent idea, because even though I'm nominally in the narrator role, we're all going to talk about what the difficulty should be, right? Because we want to establish a group feel for what feels right for each kind of difficulty, because you don't want things to be too hard or too easy. If you do not get a role that you like, right, you have too many misses, then you can spend a control point to get a chance to re-roll your misses. To do that, you declare a detail, much like we made details for our characters. You just say, here's a thing that's in the environment that is helping me put extra effort into this. When you re-roll, if you roll max on any of the dice, those explode. So you get a chance to roll them again and add more successes on top. So in theory, even if you, like, say you're rolling with a fair detail, the difficulty is 4. Hitting 4 successes on 5 dice is nigh impossible, like statistically speaking. But you can spend a control point and re-roll. And if you keep rolling sixes, you just keep going and you rack up a bunch of successes. To get control points back, you voluntarily fail to choose an action you otherwise would have to roll dice on.
Hmm.
So it's not, again, a page from Fate. It's not like a compel where the narrator goes, well, you should do this unproductive or maybe harmful thing to yourself to get this narrative currency. You just say, no, my character is going to fuck this up. And it's your call when that happens.
Well, no, I like it. It makes sense, because the control points is you're taking charge to control the situation. And to get it back, you have to just not even leave it to Fate, just relinquish control and say, nope, I'm going to do this thing, but we already know it's not going to go well. I love it.
You have seen to the core of my heart.
Ah, yes.
Yes, I love it.
There's a lot of potential for this to be super fun, though. You could make it, like, funny or serious. Like, I love that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
I actually do really enjoy that as well, because I think in a lot of times, like in D&D or even I've been playing Tales from the Loop recently, choosing to fail is really fun and causes really interesting mm-hmm. encounters. But being rewarded for that, I love.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. A couple of other things. If you don't get a great roll and you still want to succeed, you can take success at a cost, right? Think a mixed success from any Apocalypse World or Powered by the Apocalypse type game. When you do that, you get what are called glitch dice. Glitch dice are bad dice that sit in their own little pool. And the next time you do anything, even if you would not normally have to roll for it, you do have to roll for it and you roll your glitch dice. If glitch dice come up with their own successes, they cause you narrative complications.
Ooh.
There are no hit points in this game. There are no conditions. There's nothing to say, like, it's all narrative. So say you were trying to climb a ladder and you've got glitch dice hanging around and you flub climbing a ladder. The stakes are, well, if you fell, how far was it? Was it 15 feet? Yeah, you probably at least sprained an ankle or broke a leg, and then you have to play that truth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Until you have a chance to narratively get it corrected. There may be things like you lose access to one of your abilities under your clan, like your at-need ability might not be able to be used for the rest of the scene. That's like the mechanical edge to it. But most of the complications are just narrative developments. And that last bit, you all have abilities. These, again, influences on my sleeve, these are a rip straight from 4th edition D&D. So you have an at-need ability that you can do anytime you roll the dice, if it applies. I'm looking at the bear right now. It's called Posture. Whenever you use your size or strength to intimidate or cow an opponent, you ignore any glitch dice on the roll, clearing them after the action. So, bears just get to do that whenever, just whenever. You have a per scene ability, which you can do once per scene. Theirs is bait. Once per scene, you can pull the attention and focus of an opponent to you. If you spend a control point, you capture the attention of a whole group of opponents, right? You're drawing aggro. And then everyone has a once per session ability. This would be the bone bonded summon the bones. You can do that once per session. For the bear, it is called Blitz. Once per session, you can use your overwhelming strength to overcome opposition of up to rank 3. If you spend a control point, you can succeed against rank 4 opposition. So you just get to do it. The thing that may need the most mechanical tweaking are what these abilities do. So if we run into something where it's like, that's doing too much, or it's not doing enough, I may tweak it on the fly and revise it, because this is a playtesting podcast after all.
Sweet.
So that, I think, is the whole thing. The last thing to mention before we get started is when we meet new characters, we make them. So when we encounter a new character that is important enough, we will make new characters with a name, a blurb, and 3 details, but we're crowdsourcing it, right? So we're all just going to toss details in. The blurb is if they are not members of the resistance, right? Then it's like, oh, they're a corporate drone, mm-hmm. right? If they are a member of the resistance, we give them a clan.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're ever curious as to what the difference is, the code phrase is collaborators get clans.
Mm-hmm. I'll remember that. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Nice.
So that is the whole thing. That's the entire system. That's how you play this game, top to bottom, tip to toe. Any questions?
Rock and roll. I feel good about this.
Yeah, I feel good about this too. I might have questions as we go along just to double check things, but everything seems really clear.
Sure.
Thank you for the very thorough explanation.
Yes.
You're welcome. All right. Are we ready to rendezvous?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, I'm ready to break out of jail.
Let's do it.
Iron Edda Reforged is a production of the One Shot Podcast Network in conjunction with the Other Dev Productions. Written and designed by Tracy Barnett. Performed by Alex Flanagan, B. Zelda, and Jeff Stormer. Edited by Jupiter Atlas.
Hello, Rebels, and thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. I know it's a little bit different, but I am really happy that we were able to showcase what this system can do and that we are able to tell a story that is going to tie directly into the main plot, but without having to have the main cast along because we had some scheduling issues. So many, 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 many thanks to DJ and JV and Sebastian and Melissa for coming in and playing this game. They did it on literal short notice, and I am so, so very happy that they were able to. So part two of this episode comes next week. And after that, we are going to get back to the main story. We have a couple of really good recording sessions scheduled, including we get to play a weekday session for like 5 hours. And I'm so, so very happy about that. So it's going to be fantastic. I'm really, really excited to be able to get back to the main story and to let things develop the way that they're going to develop. So anyway, I hope this finds you well. Go leave a review. Go support us on Patreon. It's patreon.com/theothertracy, all that good stuff. And we will see you next week. If you like this show, you should check out some of the other shows on the One Shot Podcast Network. Shows like All My Fantasy Children. Each week, Erica Tanasayas and Jeff Stormer take a listener-submitted prompt and, using some of their favorite tabletop RPGs, create an original fantasy character. Along the way, they share laughs, stories, verbal hugs, and populate a shared universe one story at a time. Oh, you know, back in the archives, yours truly was the first guest, so hey, go check it out.